Okay, so you don't need to be around church for very long before you will see this happen. Okay, somebody will become a Christian. They'll get baptized, and they'll be like insanely enthusiastic about everything to do with Jesus. And then, you know, they'll be at church, they'll be in home group, they'll be totally committed, and then all of a sudden, without any warning, they just walk away. They're just not there. They don't return calls, you know, they won't engage with anybody from the church. And when that happens, I mean, I've seen this a few times over the course of the years. And when it happens, the temptation is for the church to be like, oh man, we're rubbish. We really messed up. You know, this person was really enthusiastic. They were really keen. They were believing in Jesus and we weren't welcoming enough, or we weren't hospitable enough, or, you know, we didn't do enough with discipleship, or our services must have been rubbish. And that all might be true. But it's much more likely that the issue was never with the church, but was with that particular individual. All right? You see, it's easy for us to fall into the trap of blaming ourselves. And, you know, maybe there are things that we need to think through and do different and stuff. But really, I think when you actually listen to what the Bible says, Jesus warns us that this sort of thing will happen. And he puts the onus of responsibility on that person themselves. And part of what is going on is this. When we first become Christians, all right, we don't know everything there is to know about Jesus. Right, we don't know everything that Jesus says or does or teaches or calls us to. We just pick up on maybe two or three key things about Jesus, who he is and what he did and what he said. Right, even if you've done something like Alpha or Christianity Explored, actually the amount of Jesus, as it were, that you've been exposed to, even over a period of 10 weeks, is pretty small. And this is increasingly an issue when people who are coming on these courses have so little background knowledge of Jesus and of Christianity and stuff, all right? So people are coming with nothing. And they begin to hear some of who Jesus is and what Jesus has done. And, you know, people are like, man, when you actually do start to see who Jesus is, it's an incredibly compelling experience. Jesus is an incredibly compelling individual. And people are like, yeah, okay, I like what I'm hearing about this Jesus. I'm responding to that. I can follow this. I can buy into this. But then what happens, of course, is you start to begin to get a bigger picture of who Jesus is. And you begin to realize that Jesus might not be exactly who you thought he was. That when you were like, yeah, I'm going to follow this Jesus, there was a lot of stuff you didn't know, but you kind of assumed you knew what Jesus would be like. You kind of assumed you knew what Jesus would do. And as you begin to confront the realities, you begin to think, well, hang on a minute, this is quite different from what I thought. And Jesus is saying things that I didn't expect him to. And he's doing things that I wouldn't have expected him to do. And as I listen to who he is and what he actually teaches, as I get to know Jesus and appreciate really what's going on in terms of being a disciple, more and more of Jesus, if you like, I become aware of it, and there are more and more points of tension. There are more and more points where actually I'm not happy with this. This isn't what I thought I was getting into. This guy isn't who I thought he was. He's not saying the things that I assumed he would say. And eventually, the dissonance becomes so great that actually people just walk away. It's just like, there's too much here that I don't agree with. And, you know, if you think about it, actually that happens in other relationships as well. Yeah? I mean, you've probably been in a situation where you meet someone and, you know, first impressions are good, you like them, you start to get involved in building friendship, you start to get involved in building relationship, and actually, the more you get to know them, they're starting to do things that you didn't anticipate, expect, or behave. They're behaving in ways you didn't expect they would behave in. And slowly it becomes apparent this isn't the person you thought they were. And the relationship sort of breaks down. And depending on the nature of that relationship and how much you've invested in it, actually, when the relationship breaks down, it can be an incredibly painful, an incredibly difficult thing. And you can actually end up reacting really quite violently to who this person is. And it's not just that you're not going to be friends with that person anymore. You can't stand being in the same room as them. Or is that just me? That might just be me. Maybe I've just had a particularly problematic history of relationships. But, you know, that's the sort of, that does happen. And I think for some people, that happens with Jesus. Certainly, that's what's happening in John 8. Alright, John 8:31. Jesus is talking to some people who have believed in him. By John 8:59, those same people are picking up stones to stone him. Now, hang on, my math isn't great here, but that's like, what's that? 28 verses. 28 verses. They go from, I like the sound of this guy, I'm listening to him, I'm believing what he's saying, to, yeah, now I want to kill you. And you think, what happens in that 28 verses that takes people who are beginning to believe in Jesus as the Messiah and brings them to the point where there is such deep hostility to him? And I think as part of this process, they turn up. These guys turn up at the temple. They've been listening to Jesus teaching through the festival. All right? And they're liking what they hear. Right? What they're hearing is only one small part of what Jesus has to say, but they're liking it. And they're assuming, oh, well, if he's the Messiah, we know all about the Messiah. We know who Jesus is. We know what Jesus is going to do. So they're beginning to trust him, beginning to invest in him. They're beginning to believe in him. They're starting to think of themselves as people who will be identified with Jesus, who will follow Jesus. All right? Now, when they begin to realize, though, who he actually is, there's that sense of betrayal. There's that sense of, no, you're not who we thought you were. And as that hostility begins to build in. Now you see, as Christians, we know this. We know this happens. Alright? And we're a bit sly with this. We know that there are things about Jesus that when people hear it, discover it, they're going to struggle. So what we do when we're doing evangelism is we take all those things and we put them all in a back room somewhere and lock the door. And front and center, in the shop window, we put all the nice stuff. All the stuff that we know people are going to like and warm to and resonate with. Alright, and this is what's happening. People will come and they will do course and they'll talk to Christians. And because we do this, people actually get sucked in. We kind of hope that by the time they discover all this other stuff in the back room, they'll be so deeply committed they won't be able to walk away. That's really unethical. That's really immoral. But this is what we do all the time. It's kind of like bait and switch, and it's not a good way to do evangelism. All right? But Jesus has completely the opposite approach. You see, Jesus totally knows what's going on here in John 8. He knows that here are all these people who are starting to believe in me, but I know what's going on. I know there's stuff about me that they are not going to respond well to. So what Jesus does, he doesn't put it all in the back room and lock the door and hope nobody notices for long enough. He brings all that stuff right out, front and center, says, right, let's do this now and let's get this over with. And then you can make an informed decision about whether you are actually going to be my disciples or not. He's going to put some stuff out that he knows they are not going to like. He knows this is going to shatter your perspective on who I am. And you think, well, that's not a good marketing sort of method, right? Actually, I think this is something that we're in danger of getting very, very wrong. You see, Jesus is not about, let's just get as many people into church as we can. All right, let's just throw the doors open as wide as we can. Let's drop the stand. Let's just get everyone in. Let's just get the numbers up. That's not what Jesus is about. He's not about getting the numbers up. Jesus wants disciples. He wants people who know who he is and who will follow him. Or, as he puts it in John 8, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Yeah, this is the box Jesus wants us to tick. That we know and hold to his teaching. We take hold of it. It's like we buy this, we accept this, all of it. We know this is true. We're going to take a hold of it and we're going to allow it to shape who we are and how we relate to other people. Right? Far from putting this stuff in the back room and locking the door. Jesus is like, let's put it all out there, because if you don't take a hold of this, you are not my disciple. Now, we've got all these other boxes. Oh, well, you know, I'm a Christian because I do this, or because I go here, or because I don't do that. Jesus is like, whatever, but this is, if you hold to my teaching, that is the defining characteristic of someone who is really a disciple of Jesus. Now, this is a much tougher set of criteria than the ones we usually draw up for Christianity. But what we want to do is hold on to our own authority. We want to hold on to our own opinions. So we're like, I'll tell you what, Jesus, I'll read the Bible, I'll hear what you have to say, but actually, I'm going to stay in control. So I'm going to be the one who is able to decide which bits I take, which bits I don't take. I like that bit, I don't like that bit. I think this is a really interesting, but no, that's not going to work. And I'm going to decide when I'm going to put that teaching into practice. And I'm going to decide how far I will put that teaching into practice. Because, you know, we all know that there's some bits of Jesus' teaching that you can follow and nobody's going to have a problem with it. There's some bits of Jesus' teaching, and if you're going to stick by that, you're going to get in trouble. That's going to cost. All right? So we actually don't hold Jesus' teaching. We hold on to our own authority to decide what bits of Jesus' teaching we're going to take on board, when we're going to put it into practice, and to what extent we're going to put it into practice. All right, and Jesus is challenging these guys. He's like, you can't do that, right? You can't take the bits of me that you like. You've got to hold to my teaching. You've got to know, understand, that when I'm teaching you, I'm not just giving you an opinion. This isn't just an interesting insight for you to critically engage with. Right? I am teaching you reality. I am teaching you truth. I am teaching you about the way the world really is, about the way you are, about what God is like. I am telling you what I have seen in the Father's presence. That is why you should take this on board and hold to it no matter what. Now, sometimes that's a real struggle. You know, sometimes it takes us time to understand what Jesus is saying. Sometimes it takes us time to reconcile ourselves to that and then to put it into practice and allow it to begin to shape who and what we are. I think that's fine. I think that process, that journey is absolutely fine. Working it through, realizing that takes time and energy and effort and we're going to make mistakes along the way. I don't think Jesus has a problem with that. I think what Jesus has a problem with are people who are just like, point blank, I'm not taking this on board. That's a very different game, right? Now, if we're going to hold on to Jesus' teaching, let me say this, and then I'll sit down, and then I'll come back in a bit, and we'll do the second half of this, and we'll see how this is all working out very much with these guys in John 8. All right, if we're going to hold to Jesus' teaching, okay, that's the deal, yeah? We're going to hold to Jesus' teaching. We have to know what it is. All right? We have to actually know what Jesus teaches. And now we're at the start of Lent. So here's a little bit of homework for you if you want to test yourself on this. Over the course of Lent, all right, Lent is a time of self-examination and study and as we prepare to celebrate Easter. How much of Jesus' teaching do I know? How much do I hold to? Live with that question for the next 6 weeks. Right? Not because I want to, you know, guilt you or shame you or humiliate you. That's not what it's about, is it? We'll see afterwards. Actually, Jesus is inviting us through this into something that's incredibly precious. And we'll look at that in a couple of minutes. But let's just take the time to make sure, actually, do I hold this? Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, then you are really my disciple. Well, let's do what Lent invites us to do and examine ourselves in the light of his teaching. Do I know it? Do I hold to it? Take Lent out. Read through a gospel. Or if you're already doing, we're reading through the Bible in a year. So, you know, pick that up maybe just for the season of Lent. But if you're thinking that's too big a step at one go, fine. Just take Matthew's gospel or something like that. Just say, over the next 6 weeks, I'm going to read through Matthew's gospel. And I'm just going to actually ask myself, do I understand this? Do I know what Jesus is teaching here? Do I hold to this? And just allow the Spirit to invite us into the freedom that, as we'll see in a minute, Jesus says will come when we know the truth. And the truth sets us free. Or do word one-to-one with somebody. I knew there was something else I wanted to say. That's the other option. Do word one-to-one with somebody and we can go through John's gospel. So if you think, I can't do this on my own. I'm just starting out on this. I don't quite know what this is about yet. I'm struggling to make sense of it. We'll do word one-to-one with you. Where somebody just, we've got these special books. They come and they've got like the part of the Bible in it. They've got all the questions. They've got little notes on it down the side. And you read it and somebody else reads it and then you just hook up over Zoom and spend half an hour chatting about the passage. It's brilliant. It's really, really helpful. So if you read it thinking, I've tried reading it, it doesn't make sense to me, try that. That is it's a really helpful way, and we're doing it. Actually, quite a few people are doing this now. So we might have to order some more copies, but we can do that. That's fine. It's absolutely fine. All right, I'll come back in a couple of minutes and we'll have a little bit more of a look at how this is working out in Johnny. Right. So this idea that Jesus is looking for disciples, not followers, in that sense of people who are, that we know who Jesus is, we know what Jesus teaches, and we're holding to that. We're not coming to Jesus from a place of ignorance or based on assumptions about who we think he is or who we expect him to be or who we would like him to be. We know who Jesus is. We know what he is teaching. And in that informed way, we are disciples holding to that teaching and taking it aboard. And that's not an end in itself. All right, Jesus has got this thing going on in John 8 where what he wants to give is freedom from sin. All right, you'll have heard when Rich was reading earlier, the language of, you know, you are enslaved to sin. And I want to break the power of sin in your life. I want to take you out from slavery, and I want to set you free in the truth of my teaching. So this is an incredibly liberating and exciting thing that Jesus is calling us to. And he's like, don't sell yourself short, thinking that you're buying into some kind of philosophy or something. You know, if you hold my teaching, it will set you free from sin. And again, this kind of teaching, it sounds sort of objectionable to begin with, but we actually know this is true, yeah? We know, we every week, when we gather as the people of God to worship, right? I think it's one of the geniuses of the Anglican Church is that there is, at the start of the service, there's an act of confession. Yeah, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever been to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting or an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm not casting aspersions here, okay? And maybe, yeah, anyway. Yeah, the first thing that you do in a Gamblers Anonymous meeting is you say, my name is Mark, and I'm a gambler. The first thing you say in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, my name is Mark, I'm an alcoholic. And there's something about church that's kind of like Sinners Anonymous. You know? And we come together and the first thing we do is we go, my name is Mark and I am a sinner. That's what confession is, part of what confession is. It's like, yeah, I'm here. This is who I am. This is what I am. I'm owning that. And I'm still a sinner. I've been like a Christian 30 years and I'm still a sinner. By God's grace, a justified, forgiven sinner. But I am still a sinner. Alright? And he's just like, you're enslaved. You are slaves to sin. That's why you keep going back and doing it. You can't break free from it. And Jesus is like, but this is the thing. I want you to be free. I want to break the power of sin in your life. And Jesus tells us in John 8 how this happens. He gives us the mechanics of this. If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. And then, so this holding to his teaching needs to be in place, and something happens when we do that. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And this would say, I want you to be free. I want you to experience that liberty. So when Jesus is bringing this up, when he's talking about, all right, you're slaves to sin, you know, it's like I was saying before, it's not about humiliating. It's not about trying to make people feel guilty or condemned or ashamed. It's about saying, look, if you start there, then this question of freedom becomes an option for you. You know? Now, Jesus is, like I said, Jesus is putting this stuff out there because he knows that this is going to be a problem for the folk who are listening to him. Right? He's like, I'm not going to pretend. I'm not going to put this stuff about sin. I'm not going to put that in the back room and lock a door. You know, and we'll just talk about other stuff because I know that that's going to be more appealing to you. He's like, no, I know this problem about sin and you being enslaved to sin. That's going to really stick in your throat. You're going to really struggle with that. So I'm going to put that out front and center straight away. And he's absolutely right. He's read these people like a book. They hate this. They're like, hang on. We totally hear what you're saying. And straight away they come back. They're like, we're not enslaved to sin. We're not slaves of anything. You know, we're Abraham's descendants. We've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say we need to be set free? And straight away, like, it's like an alcoholic. Or, you know, it's like, well, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. I like a drink or two, and sometimes maybe I drink one or two too many, but I could stop any time I wanted to. I could stop any time I wanted to. And that, you know, this has always been the case. We like to think we're good people. And yeah, of course we do things wrong, but you know, if we really wanted to, we could stop that, right? Well, yeah, like an alcoholic can stop drinking. Like a gambler can stop gambling. You know, we're addicted, we're enslaved. And Jesus has to confront them with this. Because here's the thing, if I'm in a prison cell, alright, and I spend all my time walking up and down the prison cell going, this is freedom. Man, I'm free. Anytime I want, I could just walk out of here. This is great. This is the life. This is what it's all about. This is as good as it gets. I am free. Well, what happens when somebody comes and opens the door and says, do you want to come with me and enjoy some freedom? It's alright, mate, thanks. I'm free right here. I don't need what you're offering. And if we live, convince ourselves that, well, you know, yeah, I know there's this sin, I know this pattern of sin, or, you know, but I could stop any time I wanted to, then the idea that Jesus can come and give you freedom means nothing. I don't need that. I could stop any time. I could have freedom any time I wanted. No, you're like, you're in a prison cell convincing yourself you're free. And Jesus is like, I've got to show you that you are enslaved so that when I offer you freedom, you're going to be like, oh, yes, please, thank you. Just take me free. All right, you need to start with recognizing that we are enslaved to sin. Now, they've got this thing going on, though. We're not enslaved. And it's not even like, oh, we're good people and we could stop doing bad things anytime we wanted. They've got this whole other thing going on, like, we're Abraham's descendants. Abraham's descendants could never be enslaved to sin. Where do you get that idea from? You know, you can read the Bible cover to cover and you will never find a single passage that says or implies if you are Abraham's descendants, you cannot be a slave. And this is what Jesus is doing. You know, he said, look, you've got this idea that's actually not in the Bible, and it is blinding you to the truth that I'm trying to teach you. So what does Jesus do? He uses the Bible to shatter their unbiblical ideas. Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, right, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. Now, this is one of those things, and you find this quite often with Jesus, right? Where Jesus says something that seems to make complete sense to him, and you're reading it going, what? How does that fit into the conversation? And you need to think. You need to really meditate on what Jesus is saying to sometimes see the connection between a question that's been asked and Jesus' reaction, or to work out the logic of what Jesus is saying. Alright, so what's he doing here? Well, I think what have they just said? We are the descendants of Abraham. We cannot be slaves. Now what's Jesus doing? He's saying, actually, you can be a child of Abraham and be a slave. See, he's talking about Isaac and Ishmael. Yeah? And now Isaac is a descendant of Abraham, and he is a son who belongs to the family forever. But Abraham has another son, Ishmael. And what is Ishmael? A slave. It's really simple, isn't it? It's really, really simple. And what happens to Hagar and Ishmael? They get sent away. They actually have no, although they are Abraham's descendants, they have no place in the family because they are slaves. And you see what Jesus is doing? He's pushing hard back against these guys. He's like, you are children of Abraham and you are slaves, which means you need to be really careful, because what could happen here? You could end up having no permanent place in the family. Right? That's really, you can see why they are so angry with him, and why by verse 59, they're picking up stones to kill this guy. Alright, so you can see what Jesus is doing. But what I want you to feel the force of is that Jesus is putting this front and center straight away. It's like, this is going to be the obstacle. You are going to struggle to get past this. But if you don't, you can't be my disciple. So straight away, as soon as they start believing, straight away, Jesus is like, right, let's talk about this. Can you get past this? Because if you can get past this, then you can be my disciple, because you'll hold to my teaching. And of course, the tragedy of this is that these guys will not hold to his teaching. They will not listen and take on board and accept as true what Jesus is saying. They won't allow that teaching to shape how they think of themselves and how they think of Jesus. And so they end up proving Jesus' point. They have no permanent place in his family. They walk away. They walk away. He's like, I know you are slaves to sin. I know how this conversation ends. Right now, you are enslaved to hatred. And you're not going to be able to break free from that without me. And by verse 59, he's shown to be right. Now, the power of this, the real tragedy of this, and the poignancy of it, is that in offering to set them free, Jesus is writing a check that he will have to cash by going to the cross. Because the cross is where the power of sin is broken in our lives. And so as we bring this to a close, there should be, hopefully, a couple of thoughts in your head and in your heart right now. One of those things is the Spirit, and that's what I've been praying for, that the Spirit is bringing to mind patterns of sin that are enslaving. We all have them, all right? So if you're sitting going, all right, you're not the only person in the room thinking that or feeling that, all right? We all have patterns of behavior, thinking, feeling, that plague us, and that we simply cannot seem to break the habit, the power of those things. And what I want to say to you is, if the Spirit is doing that for you, lean into it. All right, the temptation is to recoil from it. The temptation is to be like, oh, that's not a problem. I could stop doing that anytime I wanted. Yeah, really try it. Go on, try. Just see. We lean into it. If the Spirit is drawing things into the forefront of our mind, don't dismiss them. Don't try to defend ourselves against that. Don't try to explain that away or justify it in some way. Allow the Spirit's bringing that to the forefront of your mind. Remember, not to shame us, not to guilt trip us, not to leave us feeling condemned or despairing. He's bringing it to the forefront of our mind because He wants to deal with it. And He wants that power of that in our lives to be broken. How is it broken? Well, it's broken through the cross, but the mechanics of it are, if you hold to my truth, what does the truth do? And if you hold to my teaching, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So I want to finish the second part, this sermon, where I finished the first half, which was to invite you to engage with the teaching of Jesus. Because if what Jesus is saying is true, then the reason that sin still enslaves us at so many levels is because we're not holding to the teaching of Jesus. Because if we were holding to the teaching of Jesus, we would know the truth and the truth would set us free. So let's just, accept that. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's assume that what Jesus is saying works and is right and is true. And let's go back and say, okay, Jesus, I'm here with the gospel open in front of me. Will you teach me? Teach me who you are. Teach me what you mean. Teach me truth. And by your Spirit, let me hold that teaching so that your truth will set me free. Because that's what we want, isn't it? The freedom to be like Jesus. That's what we want. Let's pursue it.